Okay, this is November 11th, and Armistice Day in the United States. I understand that the Third World War ceased at November 11th at 11 a.m., and at 1 minute of 11, it was perfectly legal to kill a man, and 1 minute after 11, it was not legal to kill a man. And it just shows you there's just 2 minutes of difference between extreme patriotism and downright murder. They didn't run a gradient scale on that. Anyway, the Third World War, which practically destroyed Florida, was fought sometime, I understand, between the years 1984 and 22,617, mostly because there wasn't anybody left to sign an armistice. And that's why they've got Armistice Day here today in 1953, so that anybody can point out the fact that there was an armistice in 22,000 and so forth. And it's all very logical, and I want to call this to your attention how provident man is. By the way, did they ever bother with an Armistice Day for World War II, or had they just gotten tired? Just got tired. I guess they considered it the same war. They're indistinguishable as far as I can tell, except one had less mud in it than the other.
Which one?
No, come to think about it, the German army functioning in Russia picked up more mud. I remember that, so it balanced it out. About the only difference between the two wars then remains is dates, which shows you the straight wire into time is very important. Both of them concluded exactly nothing, which is a heartening fact. I wonder if you pick somebody up out of a shell hole in 1916, where mustard gas was lying in puddles around him and he was all shot to pieces with shrapnel, and said, "Do you know that what you're doing is going to include exactly nothing?" I wonder if he wouldn't have exteriorized then and there. Man is always trying to conclude something, and seldom that he does. Our circumstance here is a little happier. For a long time, with Dianetics and so on, we had concluded more than he had concluded on the subject of beingness, but we hadn't concluded anything, truth of the matter was. And it was the hammer and pound that this razzle-dazzle I gave the state of clear, because I had actually made some. This was an effort to conclude, you see. And we've got a concluded state there, which was not easily attained. Now, again, in Scientology and the earlier techniques and so on, we had a state which was very often, particularly when done by some auditor who didn't polish off a case or anything of the sort, would often just dive back in again, you know. And although the person was much better off, again, it was an inconclusive state. Well, man is trying to conclude something. He has the ideal of a static. He is trying to arrive. It's rather heartbreaking to realize that man's effort to arrive is so seldom reached. For instance, he tried from 1914 to 1918, and from 1939 to 1945 to arrive at some conclusion through violence. He never stated the conclusion he was going to arrive with, but he sure was trying to arrive somewhere. It must have been. And people had all sorts of things they were going to arrive at. But he didn't do that. And so it is very, very disappointing that he didn't do that. But here, we are actually arriving. We have a finite goal, which is quite obtainable. But the idea that arriving so that one thereafter is completely inanimate is entirely antipathetic to the Thetans' own desires and interests. If you think that by straightening a fellow out so he has a little more zim and horsepower, that you are now going to get a state of non-arrival, I don't see how this could hold. And yet I'm sure many people, without thinking about it, have, to some degree, have that reaction. They somehow are going to get to this concluded state, and it's all concluded. Well, now, he gets up a certain level, and being in the messed universe, so to speak, does not immediately seem to be the worst thing that could happen to him. It obviously isn't the worst thing that could happen to him, because he knows he's been in worse shape. Well, now, if he blows this universe, and so on, he would have concluded, as far as this universe is concerned, but just to have concluded beingness, and that is all, merely tells you that man has been so indoctrinated by this universe that he now wishes to die. Well, that's all very well. I have pretty clear once in a while in a terribly bad condition. All they want to tell me is they're processing in the direction of unconsciousness. They want the mock-up to disappear, and without thinking about it, they want to disappear. This is a very strange thing to have a pretty clear sitting there that you're trying to make able and rehabilitate, and find out that your goal as an auditor is in direct opposition to the goals of the pre-clear. And one case that I have now and then been processing, but I shouldn't have been doing it by the end of this class, the case suddenly dropped in my lap. I got interested in the case, and actually the case has been teaching me something. I've been smoothing it out with you, because this case, as far as I'm concerned, and this is not for the record, and therefore you should stop your ears for the next few words, this case is about as far south physically as you can get. I mean, in this case, frankly, dead and blind, rather blind, and so on. Now, I keep doing this case some good, and this case is getting rather plaintive about it all. And the only real happy pleasure moments I can find on the case when she was lying on the pavement, completely unconscious, with the entire feeling that she was dead. And this was about a year ago, and she fainted, and this was the happiest moment that she can recall since her husband's death, which was another happy moment. Now, it begins to tell you how the DEI cycle functions. The only curse of the entire cycle is that a person can. People get into the state of mind of old Schopenhauer, who believed, or wrote, he wrote, that doesn't mean he believed, who wrote that the thing to do, his book, The Will and the Idea, by the way, sometime if you want some light reading, read that book. His statement was, the thing to do was refuse to procreate and just kick the bucket and defeat the whole doggone thing. That's the central motive of that book. That's the way to win. Lose. These people come along every once in a while. But here they are on this terrific maybe called survival. And of course, survival is persistence. And persistence is never admired. So after a while, the fact that a person is persisting becomes antipathetic to him, because it's not admired. But this does not mean that if it was admired, he would cease to persist. You understand that? That's the one factor about that. Now, in admiration processing, You learn this if you run some tests on this, which you have, that the things that were persisting to some degree stopped persisting as soon as they were admired. Well, the trap, the trigger, is that a person does not cease to persist simply because his survival is admired. You admire the fact that somebody is surviving and he survives better. Now he really survives forever. But it is true that if a person had to be at the low state he finds himself in various societies, if he had to be in this state forevermore, with no change, with engrams such as those of Arsilochus on the backtrack and so on, why, he believes then that he can't, he just doesn't dare contemplate the idea of going on. This is too horrible. Every once in a while, some mother will pick up a child and bash its brains out, merely because she can't bear the idea of this child growing up in the world as it is. And it's all very dramatic. The funny part of it is, when areas really get shot up, mowed down, and so forth, why, you find the people resurging much better than in areas which are merely bored to death, such as New York. You take any city that was under heavy stress in World War V, and any of these cities showed an immediate interest in surviving under the simple fact that they were being bombed out of their britches. Fascinating, isn't it? The incidence of psychosis in the British Isles dropped to practically zero during the entire period of the bombings. Isn't that fascinating? In other words, it simply really comes down to the fact that all a Phaeton is really afraid of, if he's afraid of anything, is being bored to death. And he's really scared of that. You want to get out of some PC who is not doing too well. You want to make him good and sick so he knows something's happening. Just have him mock up some girl he's lost, or have her mock up some man she's lost. Match terminal, the person being bored with them. There is no more sickening somatics. It's real sickening. And once in a while, your PC is getting up there and he's doing just fine, and he's boxing around and squaring around, and he's just doing swell. And between sessions, he just seems to go zoom, bong, and he comes back with the most fabulous somatics, or the most terrific absence of them. He's gone numb or something. he has a real problem for you. You know what really happened between those sessions? This is an occasional session. This will happen for many other reasons, but this one, this is the serious one. This is the only one that will really give you a lot of trouble. In between those sessions, he suddenly woke up to the fact that he was using aberration for randomity, that is to say, his condition for his randomity, instead of other people's condition. He was using his own condition for randomity, and he looked into that open maw of hell. No randomity. We're going to be bored. Oh, no, we're not. We'll fix up that, auditor. Haul in the bank. That's just what they do. I have watched a PC do this in the chair. I watched him do this, tuned in on the wavelength of his ridges and so forth, and run it, and run it, and run it, and have run interest, not boredom, and have just stripped interest to a point where just the fact of stripping it bored him. and made the technique very rapid but very boring. All right, let's get a match terminal there of two people, the same person twice, interested in you. Two of you being interested in somebody else. Other people being interested, and all of a sudden, oh, sanity is not for me. Not for me. Of course, he's living in a terrifically restricted area, and he thinks these barriers are tremendously permanent, you see. And as long as these barriers are terribly permanent, he's up against a limited game. I think that man in a civilized state is whatever that is, he would do a wonderful job of being civilized if it weren't for the fact that civilization inhibited randomity the way it is, because the game gets too restricted. It is possible to be cultured. It is possible to be brave and noble and meek and all kinds of things, so long as there's enough randomity around. There's nothing like being killed every day to bring one up to present time. Sure does. Now, what's man trying to prove when he's trying to arrive? He's trying to prove that he can, not that he has. Nothing sadder than somebody. I took another case on this one, mostly because I wanted to take a case. Another reason I thought is to do you people some good in another way, stimulate public interest. But quite another reason is I don't think the case would live another 3 months. My opinion, the case never confided in me. I just don't think the case would have lived. That's my opinion as a private citizen. I think you're permitted to have an opinion as a private citizen on whether people live or die. I don't think the society has completely closed the door on that. I don't think that they let you see some old fellow who's 99 walking down the road and gasping and wheezing. I don't think that there's a law against you looking at him and saying, you know, I think after a certain time, that fellow's going to kick the bucket. Actually, by refinement, it is against the law, if you reduce the law to that. Because, you see, that's diagnosis. You can't tell people they're going to arrive someplace, according to the law. You even got laws against them. Because it's all right for the law to tell everybody they're going to arrive in jail. Well, anyway, when man gives up his own right to justice, when he gives up his own right to action, motion, high speed, and he starts playing this game with himself just to keep himself from being bored. I don't want to survive. Boy, is he on a big margin of safety. He's on a big margin of safety. This is like some fellow putting on a tremendous show with brass bands and roped off sidewalks and everything to demonstrate to people that he can stand up. Or some fellow to go around bleating that the best way to do is not survive. I've gone through an awful lot of graveyards. I've whistled through an awful lot of coffins. It's a lot of fun. You go through them like a jet bomber once in a while. You discover something interesting, like somebody that's died after he's been buried. It doesn't happen very often these days. They fill them full of formaldehyde so that they'll be sure and be dead by the time they're buried. I think it's the only reason they do that. There are a lot of thetans, by the way, wait around graveyards just because of that.
Oh.
You get all me. What's the matter?
Remember the video I had that was over a graveyard.
Just now?
No, some while back.
Oh, yeah?
When you mentioned that, I thought of it.
Well, just get the beauties of embalming.
Oh,
You get man operating on this tremendous safety margin, but there are things which will worry him. But worry is his stock and trade. Now you think you're going to get your PC out of all of his worries. What are you going to do? Flatten him out flat. Just roll him out so he has no ran down me at all. Why, you sadists. Now, he's trying to arrive so that he won't get there. That's the goal of most preclears. Well, that's true. Trying to arrive so he won't get there. Thus, he keeps continuing on and on and on and on and on. If he gets enough equipment and complexity and so on, it's only when he has a tremendously desirable randomity immediately in view. Very nice randomity, lots of aesthetic in it. And some schnook comes up and insists he has some other kind of randomity, which is just a downright stupid bore, that a fellow starts to blow his top and people start to go batty. Now, how batty does a person get for how many generations? If he keeps on surviving, whether he's admired for it or not admired for it, what is his liability of survival? Very hard to talk about too much of this without also talking about the automatic machinery that has been set up that is a universe here. It's very hard to unmingle these two things. When a fellow has this wonderful goal and people insist he have some other kind of a goal, why, he convinces them they're wrong by promptly dying forever. And to die forever, one has to be very convincing. And the best way that you can convince anybody is not to remember anything. You see, if you were dead, if you weren't, you would remember. But if you did remember, you wouldn't be dead. Yeah, that's a real rough problem. How do you go about this? But if you didn't keep wiping out these lives, you couldn't come in with this tremendous entrance, you know. You come out into the new stage of a new life, and there is this beautiful world, because you say so, and you walk out of the wings and say, ga-ga, bog-bog, look at the pity power. Then you live for a long time or short time, and after a while you say, look at that goddamn flower. So the mechanism of forgetting is the main preventer against boredom, because boredom comes about by a repetitive cycle. A repetitive cycle becomes motionless. Proof of that, actually, you take this little piece of paper here, and if I put it over there, and then I put it here, and I put it there, and I put it here, and I put it there, and I put it here, and I put it there, and I put it here, and I put it there, and I put it here. If I did that very fast, all we've got here, actually, is a piece of paper in two places. Interesting, isn't it? Just keep that up. Well, now, if you had to sit here for a long, long time and just do this, put these pieces of paper in these two different places, after a while you set up some kind of an automatic machine that would simply relieve you of this boredom. Because this is automatic machine setting up. The automatic machine setting up is taking the repetitive motion and then just gradually taking the attention off of it. You've done the repetitive motion often enough so that you're bored stiff with it. And then you're not thinking about it anymore. Now, you really, to understand randomity and forgetfulness, you really ought to make this test when you're by yourself and people won't think you're daffy. You do this, and you do this for a long time, and your attention eventually will come off of it, and you'll get the strange feeling that your hand doesn't belong to you anymore. What do you think Preclear does with body? He gets a strange feeling he isn't there and it doesn't belong to him anymore, of course. got to get interested in this body. Real rough job. The other people have to be around all the time. Remember in the doctor tapes we talk about conviction. Convincing as the highest echelon of action. Proof. Convincingness. We have to have all kinds of other people who have to be other people who are saying to you continually, you're convincing. In order for you to have any conviction at all, or you are yourself high enough on tone scale to just know, at which moment you are, of course, convinced. But that's conviction above conviction. You don't need more impacts to be convinced. You simply need more knowingness. So what's this about a cycle of action which keeps on knocking itself flat? That way, automaticity simply comes about more or less automatically. But a fellow always is setting up more machines. Now, one of the neatest tricks is set up two machines that are in counterposition to each other, which do opposite things and null each other's actions. If you set this up, you say one machine is over on the right hand and the other machine is over on the left, and each machine is totally dedicated to canceling the other machine's action, you get the interesting manifestation of motionlessness. So that you'll have a mock-up. You put a mock-up out there, it'll start to do something, and it'll just fix in position. After that, you get motionless mock-ups. Your PC that gets motionless mock-ups simply has an automaticity which prevents his mock-ups from moving. He's got two automaticities which are counterposed one to the other, and so motion ceases. And his mock-ups won't move. Well, he's very sad that his mock-ups don't move. But the point of it is, if you knocked out either machine, not necessarily both of them, you start knocking out both of them, he really jams. That's wonderful. I mean, I've done that to a PC and then just sat and looked at him for about 5 minutes. He was in a complete agony. He couldn't move. He couldn't think. He had two machines which were jammed. And what he was trying to do is unbalance it so he gets some more randomity. So everything was motionless. Stop the messed universe on him. Stop the work. Nothing was happening. In other words, they gave him a second which was 5 minutes long. 5 minutes messed universe time with no more motion in it than this 1 second. Interesting experiment. You have to have a pretty good PC and balance it very carefully and then bail him out afterwards when you do this. But the main thing that an auditor confronts is this problem of randomity. And the PC who is using Dianetics and Scientology for his randomity is using the problem for his randomity. And you ask him suddenly one day, all right, you say, arrive. Well, he wants to arrive with pre-clears. That's just fine. It's fine that you ask him to arrive with all of this data and complexity and that sort of thing, and he didn't want to do it. Why? It's a wonderful piece of randomity. Gee, you can go round and round with this randomity, but you have to kind of spin yourself in every once in a while so you can start over again. And it's only really when somebody who's really trained in this, when he's been over this cycle a few dozen times, that he's really happy about it. You know, he's gotten up and he's in good shape and he's gone down again. And he's gotten up and he's in good shape and he's gone down again. He's gotten up in good shape, and pretty soon this will look static too. As soon as that's no randomity anymore, well, the heck with it. For instance, I know one pre-clear in this class who is doing it on a week cycle. 1 week cycle. And setting it up, but watch this. This is actually, I showed you, if you just kept doing that piece of paper into the two places, well, after a while, you set it up automatically. And it just keeps on happening. Watch that. See that? It just keeps on happening. Well, that's the way you set up automatic machinery, really. So if you start going on this silly cycle out of the body, fine, into the body, and then out of the body, fine, and then into the body, sad, and then out of the body, fine, and into the body, sad. You're setting up a randomity. You keep on doing it for years. See, a randomity becomes an automaticity. And that is the law that we've been plugging at in these lectures and so forth here for quite a while. I hope you understand this very good, because you don't understand this, you won't be worth a nickel as an auditor. But randomity becomes automaticity. And that's simply the functioning power of the engram. You want to understand that, I tell you, sometime you're by yourself, take a cigarette pack or a package of matches and just move it into two positions. And at first you'll be very interested in it one way or the other, and then you just keep your hand going, and all of a sudden you don't own your hand anymore. It's like a clock. It's like alarm clocks. A lot of people are so short on this cycle. By the way, this is another case index. They're so short on this cycle that you've given them an alarm clock. And the first morning, well, this alarm clock, by the way, has a fire alarm gong on it, and a couple of whistles and a siren, you know. And it drops a bass drum and breaks a bottle of milk. And first morning he has it. Boy, does he wake up. But you know, after he's had that alarm clock for a while, after he's had it for a while, he'd have to add a couple of cases of milk and a half a dozen bass drums and the rockets in order for England, their chorus, music hall up in New York, in order to wake him up in the morning. But you know that there's a period in between. He doesn't even turn on the alarm clock, and he wakes up right on the button. Bang. The button isn't out on the alarm clock. He's been getting up at 7:35 or something every morning for 2-3 months. This is regular as can be. And in the morning, why, bang, he's out at 7:35, and there he is, and wide awake, and Sunday morning, he's out at 7:35. He'll impatiently go back to bed, knowing he should, because it's Sunday morning, and even that will cease to work very shortly. People get unhappier on their days off and holidays within a certain limit that anybody would normally believe possible, just because an automaticity is kicked in. Now you get this fellow who's working all of his life, and he's got this wonderful automaticity going. He gets up, he has two pieces of toast. The alarm clock rings. He gets up, he has two pieces of toast, he has a cup of coffee. He gets on the 8:02 bus. He arrives at the office at 8:21. He hangs up his coat at 8:22, and then has a glass of water. Here's the latest joke and so forth, and gets down to the desk at 10. Anyway, and he's been going through this cycle, and there's a certain number of pieces of paper flood his way day after day, day after day, and he puts out a certain number, and he goes home at a certain hour, and so forth. Actually, he's fairly interested in what he's doing. There's a lot of randomity on those comm lines and transport of materiel and all this sort of thing. It's very interesting. And he's working, however, to arrive. This is what he says. He's working to arrive. And then one day, the doctor tells him he better take a rest, or he retires, or something, and he lasts for, in a lot of cases, he lasts for a month and has a nervous breakdown. You know, nervous breakdown. In other words, the automaticity is running faster than he is now. Now, the main trick, I won't say that medical doctors do this on purpose, but I don't know why they always get that same response. Maybe it's just so acceptable to the patient. Maybe non-survival is so acceptable to the patient. Instead of telling the fellow to go out and take rodeo riding, which is what they ought to tell him, They tell him to take a rest. Now watch this. This fellow's got his randomity has become an automaticity. And that's all running pretty fast. And now he takes a rest and is motionless. What do you suppose is going to happen to him on balanced? He was all balanced, you see, at a certain speed, and all of a sudden he isn't running at that speed, and there's a dull crash, and all these ridges cave in on him. He's now running slower than they are. There's the way you key in automaticity. And if you wanted to give aberration a good big hand, you tell a fella to take a rest. I found myself doing it lately. I mean, I tell somebody pretty clear that I've run a session or two on him, you know, and he seems to be kind of tired, and I tell him, why don't you get more sleep? Something like that. That's as far as I'll go on the matter. Well, there is a limit there. Well, what I guess I'm actually telling him is, please get as much sleep as you ordinarily do, so we'll simply agree with the amount of sleep automaticity you have, and then we won't have to beat our brains out here trying to wake you up all during the session. See, but it's actually a bad thing to tell him. What you should tell him is, hey, why don't you go out in the backyard there, and there's a big heavy crate there, and move that crate to around in front of the garage, and then turn it upside down and move it around to the back of the garage again, then put it up on top of the garage, and then take it all apart and put it back where it was originally and reassemble it. And make sure that you do this in the next 10 or 15 minutes, huh? The guy come up to speed. There's so many reasons why, though, in the body, you see. It's so sold on reasons why. In other words, its automaticity is so great, you don't think it is. Look, breathing, blood circulation, endocrine system, oh, my gosh. The automatic responses, you wave at somebody and he blinks his eyes just like he did that moment. Every time. automatic. Darn thing's a machine. Now the PC, who is running below its level, of course is the subject of the machine. We get back to change of space processing. You just get a PC running faster than the body's running. Why, he'll snap out of his head. Anything. So we get this problem, and it wanders through all of our processing. The fellow loses interest in an automaticity. Pardon me, loses interest in a randomity. At which moment, it sneaks up on him as an automaticity. And then you turn around and start to process him, and you reverse the cycle so that you turn his automaticities into randomities. So he gets more interested in processing than he gets in living. How automatic can we get, folks? Now, that happens when you start to pull somebody up the line slowly, much more often than when you pull them up swiftly. Now, the second that you get him to a point where you're taking apart his randomity, you start to run into the moments when he set up the randomities because he was too bored. So you're running straight back through the cycles of, we must set up our randomity. Is different than setting up an automaticity. Setting up a randomity is, gee whiz, it'd be interesting to work in that big company. I think I'll go get a job there. The girl says, my, there's a lot of good-looking men in that company, and it must be very interesting. A lot of nice girls there. Gee, I'd like to have a job there. And she walks back and forth, going to school, going home from school. Every day she passes that plant and she says, gee, I should like to work there. Look at all those girls. Look at the clothes they have. They have their own money. And every time I ask Pop for a dime, he says, money don't grow on trees. I'm tired of the remark. So, next thing you know, she's all set. Because school has become a randomity, has become from a randomity, which it was in kindergarten, to an automaticity, we now have her capable of entering into a new randomity. You see that? Now, because she has made a randomity into an automaticity, she learned how to read, write, type, and other things, allegedly learned. They don't do that in America. I'm not quite sure what they learned to do in business offices. You go down here and you get a secretary and so forth. Why? It's very interesting. That's all I can say about it. But you don't get much secretarial work done. And it's a big complaint in offices. Big complaint in offices that girls over 35, 32, 35, something like that, have a real hard time getting a job. No, they don't. Not when they can really knock the stuff off and reel it out. Not when they're real good. And no difficulty at all. But a girl who has relied merely upon being a nice piece of scenery, which she was for 10, 12 years, of course, at the end of that time, may or may not be a nice piece of scenery. If she's not, and she can't do any work either, you see what's happened. By the way, most women don't even vaguely get good looking in their late 20s. They haven't enough automaticity of poise. You get some perfectly beautifully poised 18-year-old sometime, you know. Yeah, very poised. They're so knowing, too, you know. You say to them about something or other. No savvy. Blank. No understanding about it. However, they're very odd. Very oddly, you can put circuits in them. They function all right after you put a circuit in them, if you remember to put into the circuit what they're supposed to say. That sounds very snide. This is not a Hollywood reaction to women in general, but this is merely a comment on the problems of a woman. She has lots of problems. If she doesn't keep on entering into randomities and making them into automaticities, and if each time she doesn't go into a more interesting randomity, she will find that her beauty will deteriorate as a result, simply because she's now running slower than she did, which is, of course, caves engrams in on her. See how simple it is? It simply takes her out of present time. The process of growing old, if you want to know rejuvenation, in a capsule, nutshell, the problem of growing old is a mechanical problem engaged in by an automatic piece of machinery, by a body, and it takes however old that organism is. If it's a wolf, it takes one period. If it's a man, another period. If it's a man in another habitat, another period. But it grows old on the ratio of the cultures. Randomities into automaticities. You get that? And if you could convince older people they must run slower, you have a rough time. Now, they get the idea they must be more sedate, and they go ahead on this on an agreement, and it starts caving in their machinery on them. You see, they just start running slower and slower, merely because people expect it of them. People look at me aghast occasionally and so on, because I sit around and give lectures and process people and so forth. Well, I ordinarily don't run slow. It's very, very irksome to me to run slow physically. And I start to feel it. After I don't get enough, not exercise, the devil with exercise. There's nothing quite like doing something that is relatively new and quite fast in terms of motion. Sure wakes you up. And after I go through a period like that, where I'll ordinarily drop physically a few years, you see. And then if I immediately put on the brakes, and slow down quick, I'll start looking older suddenly. Now, you remember in Lost Horizon by Hilton, that gorgeous thing, this woman had gone along for all these years being perpetual youth. Well, you see, this cycle was real quick. Remember when she suddenly turns very ancient in the arms of this boy and drives him mad so that he goes over the glacier or something? Sort? She just suddenly, pang! And, well, that would be the reductio ad absurdum and the liability of immortality in one body. Liability is simply that randomity turns into automaticity and keeps on doing it. Now, if a fellow could only keep running a little bit faster each year than before, just run a little bit faster each year than slower, he would probably be in terrific shape. He doesn't have to run much faster each year, and he doesn't even have to gauge it or think about it. But if any time anybody said to him, bleatingly, you know you need a rest, he simply made the practice of sitting on their chest and gouging their eyes out and cutting out their tongue as a neat social gesture, a bon mot, he would fare very well, because this too would give emotion and randomity. Now, the police grab a hold of somebody and they slow them down suddenly and quickly, see? You know? Scree up! Jail. See? Zero randomity, just like that. Bong! And they cave in the works on it. Why don't they just shoot him? Doesn't matter whether he's guilty or not guilty. They just stop him suddenly. Now, if you want to know why a criminal goes to pieces, or how to get rid of a sudden guilt charge, or get rid of this a sudden slump or a fear in a person's lifetime, just pick up the period when their randomity went suddenly to zero, which is what we call a drop of an emotional curve, dropping emotional curve. Same thing. We get the emotional curve reaction we talk about in earlier books simply out of this factor. Randomity drops suddenly. They stop suddenly. Well, there's a way they use back on the track of aberrating, they use back on the track. There's no D on the USED. Is to get somebody to carry a message or do something or go in a certain direction and go quite rapidly, and then they suddenly confront him with something. You know, like a horrible spider or that's 8 feet tall or something like that. When he's traveling at a high rate of speed. See how that is? And they just stop him. And he stops. Now that's horror. Is it horror because he saw the spider? No, that educates him into being horrified by spiders. How do you teach somebody how bad it is over there, quickly, efficiently, and in a few minutes? You just put him in a little car, and you stop him very, very fast. Ooh, stop him real fast while he's all strapped down, and so forth, with the object immediately in front of him as though it stopped him. Then, of course, you reverse the whole thing. You understand the emotional curve? And how it is a motion curve. Do you understand this other factor that's jumping into processing and jumping up in front of you all the time? You got some inkling of that now? When I say this business about randomity becomes an automaticity, and then you suddenly slow the fellow down, and he doesn't know that he's running this fast, and it caves in on him. Well, it tells you that it's rather difficult to process somebody over a long period of time where it makes them inactive. Of course, it's perfectly all right. I mean, you can get away with it. But it tells you how, in a group such as this, the lower step cases are slowed down simply by sitting down sufficiently and by trying to understand and so on sufficiently, so that their cases all of a sudden toughen up. Just momentarily toughen up. They'll toughen up for such a period. Then they get back to their accustomed rate of speed or something of the sort, or they're doing what they ordinarily do, and all of a sudden their case isn't that tough. Well, it's because they don't have an opportunity of rehabilitating their endowment. They go back through the stop periods. They process, preferably, the stopped end of the period, key them in, throw them into restimulation, which just caves in more bang, more bang, more bang. Well, of course, you can counterbalance this. In the first place, you aren't dealing with a body. And change of space processing and rapid auditing, to a large degree, counterbalances this when it's done rapidly. If you want to know why, with surprise, some student hasn't solved to any great numerousness, there's several exceptions in this class, but why these cases that were hanging fire weren't solved by other people immediately in the class, it's actually connected in those factors. You shouldn't feel bad about it. And actually shouldn't make any type of an opinion on what the science can do from such an adjudicatory spot. Because it will solve this itself. But you should know what's happening there. And because you've seen it occur, you get somebody who is on arrest and you process him. He's gone on a vacation to be processed. No. The best way to handle a case, is make sure that he puts in just a little more work at the office or at the plant and gets his processing in addition. And then you never get this factor of sudden key-in of automaticity, because that's what it is. See, by stopping the man's randomity, you key it in as automaticity. So you get on the case a dozen times the automaticity that you would get otherwise, right? See how you use these things? It's quite mechanical. But it has this terrific liability in processing. At all times in processing, you're up against this liability. And that is that no amount of processing, sedentary processing, which neglects these factors, can be successful. There was that sleeper. It's a sleeper back of all processing. First, the terror of being bored, if you want to call it that. And the other one is that the person's randomity has dropped in speed, which of course is the immediate key in of automaticity, so that you get more automaticity on the case. And then, in addition to this, you start running him back through, cleaning out ridges and doing this and that, and busting him around in energy, and you have, as an immediate result of doing this, you have him going back through the track on boredom. And he goes back through on boredom and gets into a situation there where you're running him back through when he wasn't interested. Anytime you hit a wasn't interested, you hit the opening gun of an automaticity. Every time you hit a point where the fellow was bored, you're going to hit the opening gun of an automaticity, because he's going to find something else to do while continuing to do and continuing to possess what he has been doing. So we process this back a little bit further. The place to hit this and the way to handle it is to process out, if you're going to hit significance on anything, process out interest. And process out preferably the first entrance point of interest, which is curiosity. Now you can walk the ties of curiosity right back to the beginning of track, as long as you don't step between them. Because in between them is a complete bog. There's no cinders in between those tracks. It's just bog. Because you're stepping into the middle of every automaticity and they go in. Now, a man is very anxious to forget. The only psychotherapy any individual has had has been forgetting. Throw it away. Forget about it. See? Well, this starts to pile up on a fellow as an automaticity. Most psychos you see around started to go psycho simply on this process. They started this way. They said, well, see, well, I'll put all that behind me. I'll forget about it. Well, for years, this is very successful. And then one day, they're looking more and more haunted and more haggard, and they're all set. Because the first automaticity is the automaticity of space. And then this gets neglected and never rehabilitated. And after that becomes the second automaticity, which is the automaticity of having energy. And then that gets neglected and doesn't get rehabilitated in any way. And one gets into the first automaticity of havingness. But these are all preceded by the curiosity about. Curiosity about space, curiosity about energy, and curiosity about objects. Where we have a preclear who is apparently bogging down under processing, we've just brought him to a stop in some fashion or another. And, of course, you start processing him, and you start handling much energy in the process, you'll just start caving in all of his automatic machines on him. If you process such a thing as curiosity about forgetfulness, you could get along further. The emotion of being curious about being forgetful. Why, he'll get so forgetful he won't know whether he's got a head or hands. His goes poom. Well, you process this for a while and you'll relieve this to some degree. But all those are significance processes. There are many ways that you can strip a case of significance. By the way, they can sometimes make a case well just by making him do something that has no reason behind it. Every once in a while, just before a case breaks through this strata, he'll sit there and he'll puzzle as to what you're trying to do. And he'll be much more interested in what you're trying to do than what he is trying to do that you told him to do. Well, you wait until that utterly abates before you knock off the process, because you're just breaking him through the strata known as what is the significance of and must have a reason for. And you do such exercises as tell him to look at this. You see words, that's a big automaticity. You tell him, look at this sign here, not putting a commercial on the line, the Bidoui tissue box. And you have him look at this until he's utterly convinced that that series of symbols is related to witchcraft. He just convinces himself that that series of symbols, in other words, you put him in charge of the automaticity of words. How do you really take charge of any automatic machine? You just make the pre-clear do it. See? The old creative processing techniques are very good on this. I mean, you get the mock-up and then you uncreate the mock-up. If you can't uncreate the mock-up immediately, have him move it and turn it different colors and shift around, make it bigger and smaller and so on until he's actually sure he's handling it, and then have him uncreate it. And he at that time can. He's made it his. He makes things his by handling them and moving them. In other words, determining their location in space and changing it. And that's how he comes into ownership of all of these machines. If a person can't do something, you just make him do it on a gradient scale, and he'll wind up doing it. About the first process that licks all this, by the way, is when he's bogged by Scientology or Dianetics itself, which is the deadliest bog of all. Because there you're bogged by the answers. You just keep making mock-up, just long hours of it. Mock-up being entirely clear and beautifully interested, curious about life. And you get this as an end of session, because the key button, you must realize this is the key button. What people are trying to do is saying, I'm there. I'm here. You're there. And you're here. And you run those, by the way, just as buttons. You get a fabulous result on a case.